Well, I want to thank Secretary Sebelius and Dr. Frieden for kicking off our conference to a wonderful beginning. I'm going to ask for my slides to be put up next. I want to thank them for their leadership and support during an incredible year. I also want to take a moment to recognize a couple other people. I would like to thank Melinda Wharton, Jane Seward, and Beth Bell, who took over the leadership of the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases during the 13 months when I was isolated from my family on details to other quarters. I also want to thank Steve Redd, who was the incident manager for the H1N1 response, and I couldn't have asked for a better partner in the emergency program. For those of you who've been attending the NIC for years, you know that I like to find a theme for my talks to help me focus. Well, this year was one for the history books, and so I went back to this 19th century author who was commenting on 18th century Europe. Charles Dickens said, "It was the best of times, it was the worst of times." And somehow for me, those words really rang true. We had the worst financial crisis and economic recession and unemployment levels that we had seen in generations. But we got a once-in-a-century healthcare reform legislation. There were horrors that struck the earth, but wonders that pierced the sky. Some of you had record snowstorms this past year, and of course now we have volcanic ash over much of Europe. I would like to thank Delta, who got me home Thursday night, right before they shut the airport down in Paris, because otherwise I would have missed this conference. And then there was H1N1, the first pandemic of the past 41 years. This called upon the immunization and public health community to work in ways that we had not had to for decades. And we had to do that in a communication and media environment that previous generations could not have imagined. But of course, there was much more than H1N1 that took our attention this past year. And so what I'm going to do next is review some of the milestones of the past year and really celebrate our collective effort to make such a difference for the people that we serve. It was the best of times for childhood diarrhea prevention. Rotavirus vaccine reduced deaths in Mexico, and rotavirus vaccine reduced hospitalizations in the United States by about 44,000. But one of two rotavirus vaccines had to have its clinical use temporarily suspended while the FDA and the scientific community took time to understand what extraneous material from a non-pathogenic circovirus might mean. It was the best of times for measles prevention. Worldwide, deaths from measles are down by 78% compared to the year 2000. In the African region, deaths from measles are down by 92%. I'm not available. But actually here in the US, we even did better. We had low levels of measles, just those regular importations that we see, down from the resurgence that we saw in 2008. But while it was two steps forward for measles, we took one step back for mumps, with a large outbreak rearing its head in the northeastern United States, traced to an importation from the United Kingdom. And the epidemiology pointed to transmission in these very crowded yeshiva study halls where Hasidic Jews go to learn. Fortunately, that outbreak hasn't been spreading into the broader community, but it has taken substantial public health resources to control. It was the best of times for information technology, with more and more products becoming available for consumers. And we in the immunization community tiptoed into the 21st century ourselves, launching the design phase of VTRAX. Now, there's going to be a session on VTRAX for the state staff on Thursday afternoon, and that'll be available archived with the Q&A just about where we're going and what you can expect. But VTRAX is a new system that's being built to replace those legacy systems that you all had to deal with, VACMAN in particular. But while this is really exciting promise for the future, we had to rely on those 20th century systems, the VACMAN in particular, to respond to the largest emergency vaccination program the U.S. had ever done. Now, I don't actually see her, which makes me nervous that perhaps we didn't let her out of her office today, but I would like to specifically recognize Jeannie Santoli, who led an incredible team of people who worked days and nights, supporting the ordering and distribution and supply and assurance system. So if Jeannie is here, I hope she could stand up for a moment. And I'd also like everyone else who worked on that team to stand up. Okay. I think this means that a truck is on its way somewhere and didn't quite make it, which is the usual story. But actually, what I'd like is everyone from a state or city or office who ordered vaccine or allocated vaccine or troubleshot vaccine that didn't get where it was supposed to, or worked on the McKesson outreach and worked on the day-to-day effort. Could all of you please stand up for a moment? I know that it wasn't just one or two people. And let us all give you a moment. Thank you so much. I wanted to put Jeannie's head on one of these guys, but I decided not to do that. It was the best of times for new vaccine introduction and pneumonia prevention. We got licensure and ACIP recommendations for a new 13-valent pneumococcal conjugate vaccine that is replacing the 7-valent vaccine we've had since the year 2000. This vaccine offers tremendous promise to take a big bite out of the remaining pediatric burden of pneumococcal infections, including those drug-resistant ones that have emerged in some of the strains following our vaccination effort. If we're lucky, the vaccine given to children might even reduce transmission to adults, and we may see that same incredible herd effect that we saw when the 7-valent vaccine was licensed. So our surveillance systems are going to be just critical in the years ahead to understand the impact of this new vaccine. Globally, it was also the best of times for pneumococcal prevention. The Gavi Alliance, the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunizations, was able to secure the advanced market commitment for pneumococcal vaccines, negotiating with drug companies so that very low-cost pneumococcal conjugate vaccines could be made available to the world's poorest children. But unprecedented demand in poor countries and shortfalls in supply and temporary financing meant that Gavi had to take a pause in applications this past year for new vaccines. It was the best of times for adolescent vaccines. We saw continued uptake of the teen vaccines, Menactra, Tdap, and HPV for girls that were licensed in 2005 and 2006. But it wasn't the best of times for vaccines for seniors. When we compare the coverage of zoster or shingles vaccine, which was also licensed in 2006, with what we've been able to achieve for vaccines for teens, we can see some big differences in our target populations. Now, the teen vaccines are covered by private insurance, and they're also covered by the Vaccines for Children program, and they're supported through that incredible childhood and adolescent effort that we have. Zoster vaccine is covered through Medicare, but it's covered through the Medicare Part D program, unlike flu and pneumococcal vaccine covered under Part B. Zoster supply problems and that financing challenge has made it a little bit tricky to assure uptake, but in the years ahead, there's a lot of promise that we have from trying to expand the population that has received shingles vaccine to prevent that painful and very common disease outcome. The cost to vaccinate children through adolescence continues to soar. Compared to the 80s and 90s, it's now over $1,000 to fully vaccinate boys and girls through their teenage years. But fortunately, this past year, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act has targeted $300 million to assure that we can reach more children and adults, particularly those underinsured children and adults who aren't covered through other systems. That ARRA funding is going for vaccine purchase, state operations, communications, and to strengthen the evidence base in support of vaccination. But it's also going for innovative initiatives. And we're really excited about this one. 14 of our grantees are participating in an innovative project to improve the ability for public health clinics to bill private insurance for vaccines given to fully insured children in those settings. This is really an important way for us to stretch the $317 going forward. And with the health reform legislation that you heard about from the Secretary, the ability to collect these funds really should help in the long haul. Now for polio, we've been really experiencing best of times and worst of times for some time now. Compared to 1988, when the World Health Assembly resolved for global eradication, we saw at that point about 350,000 people paralyzed by the polio virus every year. Certainly it's the best of times compared to that. But if we look over the past decade, we've had our ups and downs. Now the first quarter of 2010 has been phenomenal. We've seen major reductions compared to last year, and in particular, huge progress in Nigeria and in hotspots in India. But we're still working hard to reduce transmission in countries where the virus was reestablished and to address the challenges associated with the security problems in Afghanistan and Pakistan. So this is a fight that we continue to wage. And then there was H1N1. We began the 21st century focusing on the 20th century flu problems, spending an awful lot of our effort in preparedness work, learning from the 1918 great influenza pandemic, trying to learn the lessons of the so-called swine flu affair of 1976, and focusing intensively on the 1997 emergence of the H5N1 bird flu strain that first appeared in Hong Kong. But as you all know, the 2009 H1N1 problem was not our parents' or our grandparents' pandemic. Instead, we had to learn this the hard way. On April 21st, the MMWR reported the first two children who suffered from this new virus, H1N1, that had not been identified in humans previously. And 2 days later, CDC held our first press conference. But if we had been able to identify the virus just a few weeks earlier while it was circulating in Mexico, it could have gotten us a jump start on vaccine production and helped us really have a lot of vaccine available before the fall increase in disease. So one of our key lessons learned from this pandemic was the importance of global disease detection and strengthening laboratory capacity everywhere in the world. Our eyes had been focused on South Asia, where the H5N1 was, and we hadn't yet gotten the final efforts to strengthen lab capacity in Mexico. But there was a rapid response from Mexico and from others. The CDC scientists just did a phenomenal job developing a diagnostic test within days specific for this new virus. The FDA approved the emergency use of this new diagnostic test, and it was shipped out to state and local laboratories around the country. It was shipped out to every country that asked for it through the World Health Organization network, and by late May, the first vaccine strains were being provided to manufacturers so that they could begin vaccine development and production efforts. This was the best of times pandemic for the elderly. The orange arrow points to a black line, which shows the estimated deaths in the elderly from the H1N1 compared to what we see with seasonal flu and the 1968 pandemic. Many fewer elderly were seriously ill or died from the H1N1 virus. But in contrast, it was really the worst of times for the young. You can see these excess deaths were evident in the young compared with seasonal flu and the 1968 pandemic. Today, we're posting on our website the updated estimates of the burden of the H1N1 pandemic. In the United States, we estimate that 60 million people were sickened by this virus, that 270,000 were hospitalized, and that more than 12,000 people died. Almost 90% of the deaths occurred in people under 65, the complete opposite of what we see with seasonal flu. So again, it was really the worst of times for the young during this past pandemic. And of course, as you all know, there was a peak in the spring, which occurred in some communities. Disease did not decrease all the way to baseline this summer. We saw outbreaks in summer camps and ongoing transmission. And then in late August, September, and early October, we had this increase in community after community around the country. This graph goes through the second week in October, and that, of course, was the first week that vaccine became available for you all to administer. A critical lesson learned from this pandemic is the need to develop more reliable methods for large-scale vaccine production, both improving the systems that we have right now to speed up the potency testing and some of the other steps, but also investing in new approaches that can more reliably make large amounts of vaccine available. And when vaccine became available, people did line up. You were there probably a couple hours before they were, except in the places where people lined up at 4 a.m. I know some of you have told me about that. And you were there to make sure these mass clinics went smoothly and appropriately. You vaccinated more people through hospitals, through health departments, and through schools than we do during the usual seasonal vaccination efforts. The vaccine proved to be extremely safe. By early December, the first large report of the safety of the monovalent H1N1 vaccines was described in the MMWR, and the safety pattern looked remarkably similar to what we see with seasonal influenza vaccines. Despite this safety record, you still had to contend with several non-safety related product recalls. You enrolled an unprecedented number of new providers to be part of the vaccination effort, almost triple of what you have in the Vaccine for Children program. But some providers wouldn't participate, and a few providers even discouraged their patients from being vaccinated. So another lesson learned that the Secretary spoke of is our need to continue outreach and education to providers to make sure that they are getting vaccinated themselves and that they recommend it for their patients. We also find this a tremendous opportunity to sustain the links with all of these new providers, the obstetricians and adult providers that are now in your public health network. We hope that we can keep them in the family with information about vaccination and how to protect their patients. This past year, an unprecedented amount of immunization assessment was carried out. I would like Jim Singleton, if he is in this audience, to please stand up, and everyone else who was part of the assessment team of the vaccine task force. These heroes spent days, nights, and weekends carrying out the equivalent of about 30 national immunization surveys, 30 years worth of national immunization surveys, and I really hope that we can all appreciate their work. From the output, I was expecting about 50 people to stand up, so I guess it was just Jim, but truly this was extraordinary. Using the National H1N1 Flu Survey, which was a modified version of the National Immunization Survey, and the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System that was supplemented with H1N1 questions, using innovative internet-based approaches, and even polls, we had an unprecedented amount of timely immunization information, helping us understand how the program was working, who was being reached, providing information that was critical for the safety evaluations, and showing us where we really need to do more work in the future. This map shows coverage in children with a combination of the NHFS and BRFIS estimates. You can see that some states did an absolutely extraordinary job of reaching children this past year. We are very interested in understanding what factors contributed to this very high uptake. There was a wide variation, though, and we really want to learn what works so that we can send those expert practices throughout the country. Many of you know Pascal Wortley, another unsung hero of this past year, who was on the phone almost daily and certainly weekly, learning what was going on in the programs and helping us manage the state and local implementation. She's going to be leading up an evaluation of the immunization practices, helping us really identify those best practices. And there's several sessions in this week's conference that really are reviewing experience in particular states. I hope you can attend many of those. So looking back on this year, it's pretty clear to me that public health identified pandemic influenza quickly and determined how to prevent spread and protect those at risk. There was improved treatment to prevent hospitalization and death, and critical triage efforts that helped take the pressure off of the medical system so that it wasn't overwhelmed. Once vaccine finally did become available, you rapidly used it to address the target populations. There were over 300,000 individual vaccine shipments to over 70,000 sites, and about 80 million Americans were vaccinated. You vaccinated more pregnant women and more school-aged children than in previous seasonal flus. Despite the worst of times economy and hardships at health departments across the country, you pulled together to deliver your best effort for the communities that you serve. So I want to return to another writer, this time one from the 20th century. F. Scott Fitzgerald said, "The test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposed ideas in mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function." Let me congratulate you for your ability to not just function, but to truly excel in this topsy-turvy, best of times, worst of times year. Now I realize from the laughter that some of you, there were days where all of us really questioned our ability to function. The pressures that were piled onto you and your teams were truly extraordinary. But as I look back on this past year, I see a clear narrative. This past year is going down in my personal history book and probably yours as well. But I see that you gave your all to achieve our common mission and realized that you were actually capable of much more than you usually thought you could do. You performed more intensely and effectively than perhaps you had ever done before. So to paraphrase Charles Dickens again, it is a far, far better thing you did than you have ever done before. So when a future writer from the 22nd century sits down to tell the tale of our time, given the historic challenges to implement health reform that we have going forward, to prepare for the next pandemic, to sustain the protection of health and save lives, to reduce costs, and really to sustain the credibility of the whole public health enterprise, I hope that that writer's tale will have a happy ending. So I really want to thank you for all that you did this past year, day in and day out, all that you do every year, and welcome to the rest of the conference. Thank you.